नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भागवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्ठिकी।
This morning we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 11, entitled Lord Ramachandra Rules the World, text number 26.
Asikta Margam Gandodai Karinam Mada Shikarai Swaminam Praptam Alokya Mattam Va Sutaram Eva Asikta Margam Gandodai Asikta Margam Gandodai Karinam Madashikarai Karinam Madashikarai Swaminam Praptam Alokya Swaminam Praptam Alokya Mattam Vasutaramiva Mattam Vasutaramiva Asiktam Margam Gandodai Karinam Madashikarai Swaminam Praptam Alokya Mattam Vasutaramiva Asiktam Margam Gandodai Karinam Madashikarai Swaminam Praptam Alokya Mattam Vasutaramiva Asiktam Margam Gandodai Karinam Madashikarai Swaminam Praptam Alokya Mattam Vasutaramiva Asikta Margam.
The streets were sprinkled.
Ganda Udai with perfumed water. Karinam of elephants. Madashikarai with particles of perfumed liquor. Swaminam, the master or proprietor. Praptam, present. Alokya, seeing personally. Mattam, very opulent. Va, either. Sutaram, highly. Eva, as if. Translation. During the reign of Lord Ramachandra, the streets of the capital Ayodhya
were sprinkled with perfumed water and drops of perfumed liquor, thrown about by elephants from their trunks. When the citizens saw the Lord personally supervising the affairs of the city in such opulence, they appreciated this opulence very much. Responsively, please repeat, during the reign of Lord Ramachandra, the streets of the capital, Ayodhya, were sprinkled with perfumed water and drops of perfumed liquor, thrown about by elephants from their trunks. When the citizens saw the Lord personally supervising the affairs of the city
in such opulence,
they appreciated this opulence very much. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. We have simply heard about the opulence of Ramaraja during the reign of Lord Ramachandra. Now, here is one example of the opulence of the Lord's kingdom. The streets of Ayodhya were not only cleaned, but also sprinkled with perfumed water and drops of perfumed liquor, which were distributed by elephants through their trunks. There was no need of sprinkling machines, for the elephant has a natural ability to suck water through its trunk and again throw it out in a shower. We can understand the opulence of the city from this one example. It was actually sprinkled with perfumed water. Moreover, the citizens had the opportunity to see the Lord personally supervising the affairs of the state. He was not a sleeping monarch, as we can understand from his activities in sending his brothers to see to the affairs outside the capital and punish anyone who did not obey the emperor's orders. This is called Digvijaya. And the citizens were all given facilities for peaceful life, and they were also qualified with appropriate attributes according to Varnashrama. As we have seen from the previous chapter, Varnashrama Gunan Vitaha, the citizens were trained according to the Varnashrama system. A class of men were Brahmanas. A class of men were Kshatriyas, a class were Vaishyas, and a class were Shudras. Without this scientific division, there can be no question of good citizenship. The king, being magnanimous and perfect in his duty, performed many sacrifices and treated the citizens as his sons. And the citizens, being trained in the Varnashram system, were obedient and perfectly ordered. The entire monarchy was so opulent and peaceful that the government was even able to sprinkle the street with perfumed water, what to speak of other management. Since the city was sprinkled with perfumed water, we can simply imagine how opulent it was in other respects. Why should the citizens not have felt happy during the reign of Lord Ramachandra? Asikta margam gandodai karinam madashi karai swaminam praptam alokya mattam va sutaram iva. During the reign of Lord Ramachandra, the streets of the capital Ayodhya were sprinkled with perfumed water and drops of perfumed liquor thrown about by elephants from their trunks. When the citizens saw the Lord personally supervising the affairs of the city in such opulence, they appreciated this opulence very much. So Lord Krishna is Lakshmi Pati. He is not Daridra Narayan, as some foolish people may make propaganda that God is the poor man and we should simply serve the poor man. But as Prabhupada said, my God is not at all Daridra. He is the husband of the goddess of fortune. And he is worshipped in great opulence. Sanjaya said that wherever there yatra yogeshwara krishna yatra parto danurdara tatra shir, wherever there is the supreme lord, supreme mystic, there will always be great opulence. Sri means opulence. Another name for Krishna is Srinath, or the deity Venkateshwar is also called Sri. And they worship, as I said, they worship him in great opulence in South India. Even though the people themselves live very simply, but the deity has more than one crown. But one crown I saw, the crown for Venkateshwar is worth $7 million, just his crown, with all the jewels and gems on that crown. And that's, he has many other similar crowns and dresses and whatever. So the people are very happy in worshiping the Lord, and they feel protected by him. And that should be the case. Wherever Krishna is properly worshipped, there should be sufficient opulence, sufficient facilities for everyone. And here we see that where there is a system of varnashrama and there is a responsible king such as Lord Ramchandra, he took it as his duty to make sure that everybody within his kingdom was nicely situated. A poor man cannot worship God peacefully because he's always worried about his house or his family or where will the next meal come from. He may have so many anxieties. It's very difficult to worship God if your mind is in complete anxiety. And therefore, even though Srila Prabhupada did write so many books, he did establish an army of preachers and book distributors, but he analyzed or calculated that only 50% of his work was done because he had not instituted some type of varnashram organization. And therefore, his students were experiencing some difficulties in their lives. And he very much wanted to see all of his disciples and followers happy. Sarve sukino bhavantu. A saintly person, his only motive is to see people happy. When others are happy, the saintly person feels great happiness. He's not envious of people. He personally is renounced and simple in his habits, but he wants to see people engaged in making progress in spiritual life and also engaged in fulfilling their purusharthas. We come to this material world because of some material desires, some incompleteness, and we need to fulfill that to some degree. So therefore, there's a need for eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. All these things are natural urges, and they should be properly satisfied in a God-conscious way. They shouldn't lead you away from the path of Dharma, but they should run parallel with or should be dovetailed along the path of Dharma, so that at the end, Janma Lavak Parakpungsang Ante Narayana Smritihi, that you won't remember your activities of sense gratification at the time of death, rather you will have pacified your senses and your mind will be able to think of God and you'll be able to get free from the cycle of birth and death. So Ramachandra inspired the citizens. We read in the previous verse that those who were advanced, they were sent out to engage in some practical work, not exactly preaching work. They went out to conquer all the other kings. Maybe that's Kshatriya preaching, I don't know. But he sent out Bharat, Shatrughna, and Lakshmana to conquer the different directions. And Prabhupada mentions that there should be no one idle. Everyone should have some work to do. And Lord Ramchandra's first business was to make sure that his brothers were properly engaged. Then he stayed back at the capital himself to meet with and to encourage the Kanista Adhikaris, or the third class devotees. So there is first class, second class, and third class everything. There's even first class, second class, and third class prasadam. It may be prasadam, but if it's not cooked properly, one can say, oh, I did it with love and devotion, but if you put salt instead of sugar in the sweet rice, then it's third class. And it may be appreciated by the Lord, but it won't be edible for most of the devotees. So there's first class, second class, third class, everything, and there are also first class, second class, and third class devotees. So third class devotees are those devotees who are not able to maintain themselves in devotional service with a very high level of practice. They're weak in their conviction, and therefore Lord Ram, and this Kanista division comprises the greater portion of society. Most people are weak when it comes to renunciation. We're attached to the material world, and we've been attached for a long, long time. And to break that attachment is certainly not so easy. But we need to make progress in the direction of renunciation, because at the time of death, it's academic. If you're attached, then you come back. You can't offer excuses. You can't say that I didn't think of you, Krishna, because I didn't get such good training, or I had other work to do, I had debts to pay, or, you know, the temple was far away from me and therefore I couldn't go and I couldn't practice nice sadhana, and therefore, you can just accept me back into the spiritual world and I've got all these excuses. It's nothing like that. It's either you're in or you're out. It's either your mind is fixed on God at the time of death, or it's attached in the material world. So we have to judge a thing by the result. If you're not getting the result, then it means that your process, there's something wrong with your process. And the standard of devotional service, Prabhupada said, disciple means discipline. There's no meaning to being a disciple unless we are disciplined. And the process of sadhana bhakti helps us to become disciplined. The process or the system of varnashram dharma helps us to become disciplined in our work. And we need to apply ourselves. The brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas, and sudras, they work together cooperatively, but those who are sudras, they are considered to be fourth class. And vaishyas are third class, and kshatriyas are second class, and brahmanas are first class, simply because the brahmanas are more advanced in renunciation. Why is a sannyasi superior to a grihastha? The grihastha may have many good qualities, but a sannyasi is advanced in renunciation, or he is supposed to be. And the goal, the standard of our standard of renunciation is the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. They practically had no material possessions at all. All they had was one and maybe two pairs of kopin. You know, I'm sure they had two pairs. And they slept under a different tree every night. They had no fixed residence, even in Vrindavan. And they ate hardly anything. They never got indigestion. All they ate was a little bit of buttermilk every couple of days. And sometimes they would forget to eat their buttermilk. They were so much absorbed. Now, we cannot hope to even equal or come close to that level of renunciation. But it is our standard. We want to go in that direction. Unless we can come to that standard, we should feel that I am fallen. Bhakti Siddhanta said, anyone who doesn't chant 64 rounds a day is patita. He's fallen. So it's not that we have to disregard what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said. It's not that we have to put the six Goswamis on some kind of remote, transcendental platform and say, no one can ever achieve that, and therefore we'll just invent our own standard and be satisfied with it. We're not like some groups that put their Savior on a cross and nail him to a cross and say that he died for our sins and thanks a lot, and then go on with their own sinful activities, saying we can never come to his standard. He's too high. They keep him too remote, too transcendental. The fact is that Krishna is achintya beda abed. Although he is remote, but he's also Lord Chaitanya, who set a perfect example to follow. Srila Prabhupada, he was as renounced as Raghunath Das Goswami, but he lived a perfect example for us to follow at this particular time in history, taking into account our background. Prabhupada was from a wealthy family. He was not poor. Srila Prabhupada had a good education. But, nevertheless, he took sannyas at a certain stage in his life, and he chanted 16 rounds along with us, He took prasadam on a regular basis. He, you know, he renounced the world to the degree that we should attempt, we should at least see as our standard. We can follow that. Now, because Lord Ramchandra was very strict, in India people talk about Ram Raja. There are many, many devotees of Ram in India. In Bombay, Prabhupada had us install the deities of Lord Ramchandra in our Bombay temple. It was our first big temple. So we had Radharas Bihari there for 6 or 7 years. And they were the only deities that we worshipped, Radha Ras Bihari, Radha Krishna. But at the time of installation, we also installed Lord Ramachandra. Now, just recently, we have opened our Delhi temple, and we have been worshipping Radha Partha Sarathi for so many years, since 1972 or 71, they were installed there. And so that's 26 years or more. We worshipped Radha Partha Sarathi. Now that we have opened the temple, we have established the worship of Lord Ramachandra. Because people want that kind of kingdom that they read about. Everyone was happy. Everyone had facility. The leader was very responsible. But you cannot have Ram Raja without Rama. You can't have the kingdom of God without God. And Lord Ram was certainly very munificent. He was certainly very loving and kind. He was, when there was even just one washerman whose wife had spent a night away from home. So one ordinary washerman, when his wife came back the next day, he chastised her, he rebuked her, saying, "I will not accept you back into my house. I am not like Ramchandra, who accepted Sita back after going to Sri Lanka and being captured by Ravana. Lord Ramchandra accepted her back. I am not like that." So Lord Ramchandra, while traveling incognito around his kingdom to hear what the people were saying, whether they were happy or not, when he heard the washerman say this, he was so sincere that he immediately called for Sita and told her that she had to leave his association, his kingdom, because people would criticize him. And that would be bad for everyone. And you know the story. Sita went to the ashram of Vasistha, and she was actually pregnant at the time also. But still, Lord Ramchandra stood on the principle that he was a king and he had to do his duty. Now, although Lord Ramchandra was so responsible in that way, but he was also very strict. If anyone broke the law and they were punishable, Lord Ramchandra did not hesitate to mete out whatever punishment was required. He wasn't wishy-washy. If someone was a criminal and had to be hung, they would be hung. It's not like, you know, politicians would gather together and create some group and say capital punishment is not good. And it was not like the American legal system. Let 100 guilty men go free, but let not one innocent person be put in jail. That's their principle. Even if 100 guilty men go back into society, we won't let one innocent man be put in jail. So they're so liberal about everything that you can't walk on the streets of the city without being mugged or raped. And it used to be that people would say, "I'm afraid to go out at night But now they're saying, I'm afraid to go out at noon on the streets of major cities because anything can happen. People can literally go out and kill someone and then bring a whole bunch of lawyers and either get free from the court case or spend 5 or 10 years in jail, and that also probably in a nice jail where they have so many rights for having their cigarettes and their television and their this. It's like a just a boys' camp or something in many ways. Now that people are fed up, they're starting to bring back capital punishment. But Ramachandra, he was very tough also. He was soft like a rose, but he was hard like a lion. When criminals were there, when delinquent people were there who wouldn't follow the rules and regulations, he didn't pussyfoot. He didn't beat around the bush. He would execute the laws. He would bring those people to justice. So we also have to decide what we're going to do. We're now, our society is growing. More and more people are paying attention to us. People have read our books. We've distributed millions of them. I think in Croatia, every person must have at least one of our books or something. We've distributed so many of these powerful literatures. And not only that, but people who were very much part of our counterculture movement or whatever, the young people in my day are now taking over the world, and there are very big opportunities for preaching, and there are opportunities if we organize ourselves properly to bring so much opulence to serve Lord Krishna. Wealth we have no use for in our own lives, but it does have value in terms of our preaching. We can live simply, but we should not be afraid of using material opulence for our preaching work. And even there must be a certain minimum standard so that devotees can live comfortably. At least their basic necessities should be taken care of so they don't have to worry about them. So they can apply their minds and their energy fully in devotional service. We should be able to offer security to all devotees who give their lives to pure devotional service. So we have to become well organized, and we have to become disciples. We have to become disciplined. If we're going to try to institute, Prabhupada says here, there's no question of good citizenship without the scientific division of labor. People should be properly situated in work according to their psychophysical nature, which will make them happy. You should be happy in your work. And therefore, this varnashram. But it requires discipline. And if we can't get disciplined even in our basic activities in the temple, then how can we go any farther? Now, I'm going to read out the Riot Act. If you don't know what the Riot Act is, it's a famous term for an act of parliament in England that it would be read out in the Middle Ages whenever there was any, you know, dangerous situation. They had loud hailers or people who would, you know, read out a decree from the king or from the parliament or whatever. So the Riot Act was something that was read out, even today, I don't know they may do it, but people would be informed that if you gather together more than so many people, the situation is tense, you should know that the police will fire upon you, or that you will be put in jail, or if you do this, then this is what will happen. So, I fondly call this the Riot Act. Whenever there's a dangerous situation amongst a group of very nice devotees who should otherwise be doing well, but for lack of awareness, there's some ambiguity as to what the standard of our discipline should be. The following excerpts are taken from Srila Prabhupada's letters. This is not by any means a complete list. It's just a small list. So I'll read them, and I request you to listen to them and see if there's any relevance in your temple or in your lives, whether this clears up any doubts that you had. And you can tell me about that if you like. Quote, "You must see that they strictly follow the regulative principles, the four prohibitions, as well as the devotional practices of arising early, morning bath, putting on tilak, attending Mangal Arati, chanting japa 16 rounds, and attending Srimad Bhagavatam class. This is the duty of all my initiated disciples, whether they are big or they are small." Quote, "Everyone must rise early, take bath, attend Mangal Arati, chant at least 16 rounds, attend class, and follow the four regulative principles. If these things are lacked, then there's no question of spiritual life." Okay, did you hear that? There's no question of spiritual life. "Anyone who does not accept these things staunchly will have to fall down. You must teach them by your own personal example. Otherwise, how will they learn? I am requesting again and again that all of my disciples simply follow all of the rules and regulations. Rising early, chanting 16 rounds, attending Mangal Arati in class, etc. All are essential for spiritual development." Quote, "Please institute these most important points of attending Mangal Arati and chanting 16 rounds. These are the most important points of Krishna consciousness process." Quote, "Everyone should join the Mangal Arati. Gradually we should become more regulated and strict for following the rules and regulations. Otherwise, we shall fall down." Quote, "And never neglect to chant your 16 rounds of beads daily. Rise without fail, attend Mangal Arati, take bath, and follow the other regulative principles. And everything will come out very successfully, you can rest assured of that." Here's a nice one. "Yes, reading my books will help you. Philosophy must be there. But if you do not also apply the philosophy by participating in all temple affairs, like rising early, attending Mangal Arati, performing devotional service, then simply learning the philosophy will have zero effect." So the future of this Krishna consciousness movement is very bright. So long the managers remain vigilant that 16 rounds are being chanted by everyone without fail, that they are all rising before 4 in the morning, attending Mangal Arati, our leaders must be careful. And if, quote, "And if you simply keep to our standard program, that means chanting daily 16 rounds, rising early, attending Mangal Arati like that, if this program is strictly maintained amongst all the devotees, they will remain pure. And if preaching is pure, automatically leaders, managers, funds, everything will be given profusely by Krishna without any doubt." So it goes on like that. There are many, many more quotes. The same message is there. Here's one from Bombay. "All men who live in the devotee rooms must attend Mangal Arati or starve." So we used to do that. I think they still do. I'm not sure. They sometimes, it started again and stopped. But at one point, when I was the president, You came to Mangalarti, or you didn't take prasadam in the morning, you know. And today, even today, we have a book that everybody signs in the morning. When they come, they have to. There's even a guard there. We've hired a guard who sits with the book, so you can't have your friends sign you in. How many people sign their name? We have about 150 devotees, and we get about 120, 130 devotees at Mangalarti, and a good portion of the morning program. Some other quotes. In spiritual strength, there will be no scarcity of money. Please do not neglect yourself in prescribed duties for maintaining your spiritual strength. Without keeping spiritual strength, there is no question of any accomplishment. If this routine work is always done nicely and never neglected, then our all success is guaranteed in whatever we do. I am confident if you simply take our principles very seriously and follow them rigidly, everything will come out successfully. There's many other things. Monetary matters are secondary. On principle, we should better starve than neglect our rules and regulations. All the temple members, without exception, must rise by 4 a.m. and attend Mangalarti. Sadhana and temple president leadership. Managers must remain vigilant that everyone follows sadhana. You must be the perfect example of Krishna conscious devotee. If temple worship is not, here's a good one. What is our most important strategy? Does anybody know? In the world, what have we concentrated on for about 30 years? It's in the Premadwani prayers. Srila Prabhupada's transcendental book distribution key. Okay. If temple worship is not attended, better to stop the press. Got it? If temple worship is not attended, better to stop the press. So, we have to take these things in a balanced way, but I know that if someone takes the trouble to push me towards purity, towards perfection, I consider that that person actually has love and affection for me because he's taking trouble. If someone doesn't take any trouble and just allows me to slide down into hell, he may think that he's being nice to me, but I don't think he's being nice to me. And there's the story of the young man who Prabhupada tells this story. He was raised, his mother and father died, and he was raised by his aunt. So his auntie, she felt sorry for him that he didn't have a mother and father, so she just spoiled him by giving him everything and by allowing him to do anything he wanted. So he grew up in a very arrogant, rebellious way, and he stayed out late at night even as a young teenager, and he fell into bad association. He began to steal and do all sorts of illegal activities because of bad association. And finally, one day, he was caught as a murderer, and he was sentenced to hang. So he was asked if he had any last wish, and he said, "I want to speak to my dear auntie." So they brought the auntie, and she was crying, her poor little nephew, and, you know, he's actually my good little boy, he couldn't have done this and all that, you know. And so he also, "Auntie, I just want to tell you something from my heart, and it's private." So she was allowed in the cell, and she leaned over to hear what he had to say, and he put his head up to her ear, and then he bit off her ear. And so she screamed, "Why have you done this?" And he said, "Because you thought you were being kind to me, but you never disciplined me, and actually you spoiled me. I am dying here today because you didn't take the trouble to give me a little discipline to help me. So you didn't love me." So if we want Ram Raja, if we want our streets sprinkled with liquor, if we want to be successful, peaceful, happy, opulent, and I've seen when there's opulence, the devotees are peaceful and happy. Just like in Bombay, we have a beautiful temple and we have no problem for funds. And, you know, the devotees are not very spiritually advanced. Don't let anyone in Bombay get this tape. You know, because at least they have their family maintenance paid for, their schooling for their children, they feel secure, they work pretty hard. And there's effective preaching done. None of them individually are very spiritually elevated, but together they work, and we put on huge festivals, and thousands and even hundreds of thousands and even millions of people come to the temple over the years. They hear constant kirtan, they see beautiful deities, and they buy books, and we're known all over Bombay and all over India just because of our temple in Bombay. So I now Delhi, Bangalore, we're attracting more and more opulence. We have to learn how to manage that opulence. It's not for us individually, it's for everyone. We're simply caretakers. But if we want success in any of our temples, it really comes down to the basic spiritual strength, the foundation. We have a standard. Everyone should know that that's what we're aiming for. If you can't come to the higher standard, that's okay. We understand. We still love you. You know, but we should know that if we can't come, we should try to every day, we should try to get a little better. And if we can't make advancement, we should cry a little bit. We should feel sorry. And try to put ourselves in the association of people who will push us, because they are the people who actually love us. But we can't lower the standard. If you try to lower the standard and say that it's not really important, there's one, and I hope, I'm just praying that it doesn't become a big thing, but I have one, I guess, I don't know what to call her, a former disciple, that would be better, who's little Pagal, Hindi for crazy, and she is spamming Calm with information about one Gaudiya preacher who is now advertising his group as they're the society of rules and regulations, and we are the society of love. That's what they're advertising. We are the society of love, and they're the society of rules and regulations. That's right. We're the society of rules and regulations according to Shastra. Shruti, Smriti, Puranadi, Pancharatra, Vidim Vidi, Aikantiki, Harir Bhakti, Utpat, Yaiva, Kalpate. If one practices bhakti without reference to the proper scriptures, then whatever he does is simply a disturbance to society. We also have love, but that love is based on a solid foundation. We're not so puffed up and egoistic to think that we've come to the platform of Raganuga Bhakti after only a few months or years of being away from the most sinful type of lives that we followed in our previous existence. It will take us time. But even in Vaidhi Bhakti, even in Sadhana Bhakti, there's plenty of ecstasy to go around. Quite enough. And we've got an institution that can offer us stability, can offer us organization and management. If you want to jump directly to the society of spontaneous lovers, then, you know, everything's got to be spontaneous. You know, it's like you have 500 people together and, you know, when's prasadam? I don't know, Prabhu, it's just spontaneous, you know. And, what about education of our children in school? Well, you know, you just have to love Krishna spontaneously and everything will just happen automatically. No need for organization or rules or management or anything. You know, and if you're really advanced, then you just put on white and go to Radhakund and, you know, chant japa and forget the world. But that's not Prabhupada's mission. We want to give everyone a practical chance to make gradual advancement by following the prescribed system as has been given by Rupa Goswami. And they followed, Prabhupada followed the prescribed rules and regulations. So I hope all of you will understand this point clearly. You're in very important stage of your development, and I want to see you all succeed very nicely because I see that you're all very sincere people and intelligent also. Yugoslavia is one of the most nice places in ISKCON to visit because there are a lot of interest in Krishna consciousness, a lot of intelligent, spirited young people who want to do something. But let's get it straight. We have our standard, and we're trying our best to come up to that standard, and we'll keep trying until, with Krishna's help, we'll get there. Mangalarti, 16 rounds, 4 regulative principles. They're all essential for success. For those who are living outside and can't come to the temple, then do something in your own home. Have some kind of a program where you spend X amount of hours every morning in sadhana. According to time, place, and circumstance, we may need to adjust a little bit, but basically, Brahma Muhurta is a specific time. It's a time of the mode of goodness. And once you get out of that time period, the mode of passion takes over. So it's better to do your puja and your sadhana, etc., during Brahma Muhurta. And it means you have to rise early. And if that means you have to make the sacrifice to go to bed early, then that's what you have to do. That's discipline. So we're almost out of Brahma Muhurta time, so are there any questions, comments? Yes. Yes, his question is that if you can't chant your rounds one day due to excessive work or engagement in devotional service, then you can do them. Can you do them the next day? And of course, you can try and make up the next day. But if you find that it's becoming a practice, and you know, you wake up one morning, let's see, I'm chanting my rounds from 15 days ago, and then tomorrow I'll. Then you better say, help! And, you know, readjust your schedule. Something's wrong.
If you have a strong foundation, your roots are solidly in the ground, then your bamboo can bend from time to time, but it'll snap back. But, you know, if you're constantly bent out of shape, then you'll never snap back, and you'll get weaker and weaker. Any other questions? Yes?
No.
We have three temples in Bombay, plus we have a hospital, plus dozens of satsang centers. Yeah. Anyway, go on. Oh, I would say that they have one of the best organized congregations in ISKCON. At least they're certainly exemplary in many ways. They may be getting into Varnashrama. I haven't heard too much about it. I do know that they basically, a lot of them are, well, there's Maharashtrians and Gujaratis. I guess there's different ethnic groups, but they're all from very pious backgrounds. They have a system of counselors, which is very, very effective. Every group of about 10 or 15 devotees has a counselor. And that counselor's responsibility is to contact each and every one of the families and see that they're chanting their rounds, following the principles, and that they don't have any difficult problems that they can't solve. His duty is to try to help them solve their problems. And then they have a group of counselors. They meet together regularly, and Radhana Swami is kind of like the head counselor. They have meetings with him also. But the counselors meet, and they have their own organization of how the counselors can become better. And they have their own marriage bureau, and they literally make arrangements for their members to get properly connected, boys and girls of like nature, and they really go out of their way to take care of their people. They have started a hospital, the Bhaktivedanta Hospital. I have some beautiful photos of that hospital if any of you want to see it. And they have lots of good things. What did you say? You wanted to work in the hospital? No. Okay. Yeah, they have a very nice hospital. It's a state-of-the-art, first-class hospital. Cost about, 10 crores. It was about $2.5 million, $3 million. And you go into the hospital, and the first thing you see is a deity of Prabhupada. You go up to the reception, and the reception says, Hare Krishna. And, you know, there's piped in music in all the rooms of Prabhupada bhajans. And, you know, you're under the x-ray machine, and the x-ray specialist says, can't see Super Soul, but, whatever. Of course, all the prasadam in the hospital is offered to Krishna. And no abortions. They abort your maya, but they no other kinds of abortions. And it's a nice hospital. But the point is that they have taken the trouble to organize themselves to take care. But they're very strict on their principles also. Radhana Swami is constantly emphasizing simplicity, humility, truthfulness, etc. And they have in their ashram about 40
brahmacharis. It takes you about 2 or 3 years or more to get situated in the ashram. You can't join the ashram unless you've proven that you're committed and you really aren't going to marry for the rest of your life. You're committed to brahmacharya. And the result is that they have a very high standard of people living in the ashram who follow the principles very nicely. They have about 30 of them who are college graduates, and a number of them are master's degree holders, and they spend a lot of their time studying shastra and giving lecturing to the congregation. They have about 35 programs a week, 5 a night, 7 days a week. And the brahmachari will go out to a particular area of Bombay, and there will be a congregation there, and they'll rent a hall. So this is just in one city. There are 35 programs a week, including Sunday. And they will rent a hall, and they'll have their own instruments and this and that. The congregation, the brahmachari, will give some pravachan. And the congregation are so pleased with the purity and the renunciation of the ashramites that they're inspired to follow in their footsteps. So they're very respectful and very inspired to follow. And the result is also that they work together cooperatively. They are constantly going on yatras or trips to holy places. Just recently, Radha Swami took a group of about 500 people to Mayapur, Jagannath Puri, and maybe somewhere else. It's 500 people. They rent train cars. They have 2 or 3 train cars, or more, where they all travel together. And, you know, on those journeys, it's not like they stay in 5-star hotels. These grihastas, who are accustomed to their material comforts, they give that up and they follow their leaders, and they live very simply on the yatra. And although arrangements are made for prasadam and this and that, it's nicely organized, but sometimes they have kirtan for 2, 3 hours, 4 hours at a time, along with some lecture, and, you know, they forget prasadam. They just get into the chanting. So, it's a model. It's a model. And others are definitely looking. Bangalore is another example. Madhu Pandit, he started that Bangalore temple with about 4 or 5 devotees. He and his wife and 3 or 4 brahmacharis actually. Yeah, I think there were about a total of 6 of them. So, say 4 brahmacharis, he and his wife. And he himself, he's a graduate of IIT. He was a gold medalist. That means he was top in his class in every one of his subjects. And he graduated from the most prestigious university in India, Indian Institute of Technology. It's like MIT in the U.S. So, but he was very particular about sadhana. And when he opened the temple, and he gave his speech at the opening ceremony, he said that, "I built this temple by managing the sadhana of the devotees." That was his conclusion. And to this day, you can visit Bangalore and you will see that Madhu Pandit is right there at Mangalarti. He spends time with all the devotees during japa. Those devotees who have a tendency to fall asleep during japa, they have to come and sit with him, and they chant with him right there. The others usually walk around or whatever. Their morning program goes up to 9:30, not because they have a long class, but because they're also reading time is allotted. It's part of the morning program that they all read half an hour, Prabhupada's books. And the result is that the devotees there are so attracted to Madhu Pandit that one of my godbrothers recently went there and stayed there for a day or two, and then he had to leave. And so one devotee said to him, "Oh, Madhu Pandit is coming today. Are you leaving without having darshan of Madhu Pandit?" In other words, the boy sincerely was very attracted or very, very much appreciated Madhu Pandit's example. And the same, it's the same thing. They have about 65, 70 members in their ashram. 50 of them are brahmacharis, and 39 of those are college graduates, 10 of them are IIT graduates. And you go to that temple, it's well organized, and devotees are happy. And it's hard to tear a young man away from his family in India, because families are very tight, and the whole family will go to the police and the prime minister if you try to take away one of their investments. It's sort of like that, you know, a son is an investment in your old age pension. So, but young men are joining, and they even, you know, anyway. So, quality. We need quality of devotional service. That's our revolution. There have been Krishna devotees and Krishna temples and spiritual places. We're not the first ones to introduce these things. They've been there for a long time. But what Prabhupada is giving is pure devotional service. We don't want to get watered down. We are Krishna communists, which means constant revolution. We don't get settled into status quo. We've got to be constantly reviving and, you know, revolting against Maya. Any other question? Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.